Members, let's call this meeting to order. I don't believe we have a quorum yet, so Mr. Chair, if you would like to begin.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And since we don't have a quorum, we won't move the bill, obviously, until folks get here. However, we like to start on time, and they can take it upon themselves to get caught up with anything that they may or may not have missed. Madam Chair, if we could turn it over to staff that they'd be able to walk us through the spreadsheets and the bill, and then we'll take it from there.
Okay. Mr. Savory, would you like to begin?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm referring, the document I'll be speaking from today is the three-page spreadsheet that, I believe, is on the table and included in your packets. My plan is to do a high-level summary of that, go through the general fund changes as well as the revenue changes, and then review the general fund spending for the budget area. Feel free to interrupt me with any questions, and we will kind of go from there. So first I will go through the change items listed in the bill. If you'll look, I'll begin starting on line 19 and then proceed downward. I'll skip over the fee changes for now and go to the final page of the spreadsheet and review the revenues as a way to do that, I believe, more efficiently. So I'll begin. The bill includes wolf depredation compensation increase of $200,000 in fiscal year 16 and $150,000 in fiscal year 17 for a total of $350,000. The bill also includes a dairy lab increase of $150,000 in both years of the biennium for a total of $300,000. The bill includes money for additional meat inspectors for $250,000 in each part of each fiscal year for a total of $500,000. Also includes money for manufactured and wholesale food licenses. That is appropriated at $1.35 million in each year for a total of $2.7 million for the biennium. Retail food safety regulation at $1,024,000 in both fiscal years for a total of $2,048,000. A dairy program increase of $150,000 in each fiscal year for a total of $300,000 for the biennium. Commercial canning inspection, $70,000 in each fiscal year for $140,000 for the biennium. Line 27, the delegated food inspection program, that is $100,000 in each fiscal year for $200,000 for the biennium. The retail food plan review is for $100,000 in each year of the biennium for a total of $200,000. The direct sale of food licenses, or the cottage food portion of the bill, which is better known as, includes appropriation of $25,000 in each year, fiscal year, for a total of $50,000 for the biennium. The vocational training program listed in the bill includes appropriation of $75,000 in fiscal year 17 for a total of $75,000 for the biennium. Additionally, on line 32, you'll see the elk depredation compensation, which includes a $50,000 increase to the rider within the bill for a total of $100,000 for the biennium. Skipping down to line 37, you'll see the bulk milk haulers samplers fee. That fee was changed from a general fund fee to an agricultural fund fee. Therefore, it shows up as a negative number as a cost to the general fund. And the line below, line 38, just demonstrates the cost of that particular fee as a revenue loss and a cost to the committee's target. That is a total of $50,000 for the biennium. I will then skip to the second page, skipping the fees for now. We'll come back to those in a little bit. Diving more deeply into the MDA budget, promotion and marketing stays the same from the base, so the bill appropriates $3.873 million in both fiscal years for a total of $7,746,000. The new agricultural, bioenergy, and bioproduct advancement portion of the bill includes change items for production, agriculture, research, and rapid response. That is $5 million in each fiscal year for a total of $10 million. Includes also advanced biofuel grants, $500,000 in fiscal year 16, $1.5 million in fiscal year 17 for a total of $2 million for the biennium. The total for this particular area is $12 million, split at $5.5 million in fiscal 16 and $6.5 million in fiscal 17. Next, line 99 is the value-added products agri line item. The change items in this area include agri-crop research grants, a reduction of $2.7 million in fiscal year 16, and then another reduction of $2.7 million in fiscal year 17, for a total of $5.4 million in reductions in that area. Additionally, the agri-next-gen grants, that portion is reduced by $1.2 million in fiscal 16 and $1.2 million in fiscal 17, for a total of $2.4 million for the biennium. That line item, as it appears in the bill, is now at $6.335 million in each fiscal year for a total of $12.67 million. Up next, if you look at line 109, is the admin and financial services line item. General fund change items in that area include the Center for Rural Policy and Development that is appropriated at $75,000 in each fiscal year for a total of $150,000 for the biennium. I will come back to the fee changes in that area. And that concludes the Department of Department of Agriculture. I'll move on to line 144, which is the Board of Animal Health. At this time, there are no change items proposed for the Board of Animal Health from the general fund. The appropriation will stay the same from, will be $5.263 million in fiscal 16 and $5.272 million in fiscal 17 for a total of $10.535 million. On line, on line 165, you'll see AURI. The general fund change items in that area include a repeal of the statutory appropriation that goes to AURI. That is at $1 million per year for a total reduction of $2 million for the biennium. That brings the general fund appropriation as of the reductions to $2.643 million in each fiscal year for a total of $5.286 million for the biennium. If you look down at line 173 in the staggered line, you'll see total general fund change items at $4.219 million. In fiscal 16 and $5.244 million in fiscal 17 for a total of $9,463 million for the biennium. If you'll flip the page one more time to page three, this is a table of all the revenue increases that the fund general that the funds will receive due to the fee increases. I'll go through these quickly as I know the chair and Mr. Sullivan will go through these in their walkthrough additionally. I'll skip down to line 202, the anhydrous ammonia fertilizer oversight. My apologies, there should be numbers there. It should say $0 in fiscal year 17 and $250,000 in fiscal year 17. There was an oversight on my part for a total of $250,000 for fiscal years 16 and 17 for the biennium. Line 203 lists the seed sampling increase, which is $340,000 each fiscal year for a total of $680,000. Line 204 is the plant export certification fee increase, which is $3,000 in each fiscal year for a total of $6,000 in the biennium. Line 205 is the plant nursery certification, which is again $3,000 in each fiscal year for a total of $6,000 for the biennium. Line 206, the structural pest control, is $13,000 in each fiscal year for $26,000 for the biennium. Lines 207 and 208 represent a change in where the fund would go for the corporate farm filing fee. Currently, that fee was listed to go to the special revenue fund, but this bill changes that to the agriculture fund. I've listed both lines just to demonstrate the fact that that fee, if passed, will now go to the agricultural fund. It is listed at $135,000 in each fiscal year for a total of $270,000 for the biennium. The milk procurement fee increase listed at $300,000 each year and generated revenue for a total of $600,000 for the biennium. The bulk milk haulers samplers fee increase listed at $25,000 each year for $50,000 for the biennium. Line 211, the specialty pet food late fee increase listed at $130,000 each year for a total of $260,000 for the biennium. The commercial feed license fee increase listed at $100,000 each fiscal year for $200,000 for the biennium. The minimum annual inspection fee increase listed at $85,000 in each fiscal year for $170,000 for the biennium. The pet food registration fee listed at $345,000 each fiscal year, $690,000 for the biennium. And the specialty pet registration fee listed at $172,000 for the biennium. That brings the revenue change totals for revenue at $1.565 million in fiscal year 16 and $1.815 million in fiscal year 17, adding in the $250,000 I had neglected to include on this chart. If you flip back to the first page, I'm going to refer to the general fund totals for each of the agencies within the committee's purview. If you look at where it says fiscal year 16 and 17, House File 1437-DE1, you'll see the totals represented in this bill. I'll go over them just briefly. Listing the fiscal year 16 number for the Department of Ag is $37,139,000. Fiscal year 17 is $38,164,000. Board of Animal Health is $5.263 million in 16 and $5.272 million in fiscal year 17. AURI is $2,643,000 and is the same in fiscal year 17 for a total of $91,124,000 for the biennium and all general funds, including all of the change items within the bill. That represents a $12,024,000 spending increase over the governor's proposal, and a increase of $9.463 million over the 16 and 17 base. And I believe that will conclude my presentation, unless I have time for questions.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, did you have something?
Madam Chair, I was going to ask, number one, do we have a quorum currently?
We do.
All right. So, first of all, thank you, Mr. Savory, for walking through that. Madam Chair, I would really like to be able to adopt the DE amendment if we could get the bill in the shape in which we'd speak from it. If we could move, first I'll move the bill, if you will, to get it before us. House File, what is it? 1437.
Mr. Chair, can we move the minutes from the last meeting?
Of course. You're the
Thank
chair.
You. Well, you're the boss. No. Do I have a member that can?
Good, Madam Chair.
Yeah. Okay.
Either way.
Okay. All right. Representative Metz, I move the minutes. And it's all in favor, right? Okay. All in favor of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Got that passed. I guess I'm supposed to do that. Then we want to pass the DE.
Yeah, Madam Chair, so then I'll go ahead and move House File 1437 to get it in front of us, and then I'd also like to move the DE1 amendment, members, because that's what we're going to be working off of, if I can get your support to just vote on the DE1 amendment. Just get the bill in the shape I'd like to speak to it.
Okay, Mr. Chair, you moved House File 1437, and then we're going to pass DE1. Move to pass, accept DE1. So, is there any discussion? Okay. All in favor of DE1, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, would you like to continue?
Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah, thank you. Motion prevails. Thank you, Madam
Motion
Chairman.
Passed.
If we could then ask Mr. Sullivan if you'd like to walk through the DE1 amendment.
Mr. Sullivan, would you like to?
Yeah,
Madam Chair and members of the committee, Mr. Savory covered the appropriations that appear in Article 1 of the H1437DE1. So unless members have questions on rider language, I'd like to skip to Article 2, which begins on page 13. In the first section, Section 1, this is a Department of Agriculture proposal. It eliminates a reference to the Shared Savings Loan Program, which is repealed at the end of this amendment and is also repealed in House File 1437 as introduced. Section 2 is the Farmer Ombudsman Office that members are familiar with, Representative Applebaum's bill. Section 3 and Section 4 are Department of Agriculture proposals to change language regarding who is required to obtain a structural pest control license. Section 5 is from Representative McNamara's bill. It allows the department to use pesticide regulatory account dollars to pay for plant tests in order to determine whether the plants contain a detectable level of systemic insecticide. Section 6 begins on the bottom of page 14 and continues, and actually Section 6, 7, and 8 are all Governor Department of Agriculture proposals. They clarify that a person must have a pesticide license or certification in order to purchase a restricted use pesticide. On to page 16, Section 9. This includes the department's proposal to increase the fertilizer tonnage inspection fee from 30 cents to 39 cents per ton. And then it also includes language from Representative Paul Anderson's bill that deposits the revenue from the 40 cent per ton AFREC, or Agricultural Fertilizer Research and Education Council surcharge, into a new fee in the agricultural fund. Currently, the money goes into the fertilizer account along with the other inspection fee revenue. This language segregates it out into a new account, which is created in Section 11. Section 10, before we get there, just eliminates some outdated language about the Department of Agriculture's support for the AFREC Council. And then Section 11 is the new account that I mentioned. The language appropriates all the proceeds to the Department of Agriculture from the 40 cent per ton inspection fee for grants that are determined by the AFREC Council. The department is authorized to use up to $80,000 each year for direct costs that the department incurs as required by law to provide fiscal and administrative support. And then a cross-reference to a statute that allows the department to collect its indirect costs from the account as well. Sections 12 and 13 are Department of Agriculture proposals. They have to do with plant phytosanitary and export certificates. You'll see the language. Section 12 removes a sentence, then appears in a separate section in Section 13. Essentially, that sentence just moves to another section of law. This section also eliminates a requirement that the department inspect people who are applying for a phytosanitary or export certificate for plants, plant products, or facilities, and gives the department the authority to do so. On to page 18, Section 14. These are phytosanitary export plant certificate provisions once again. These allow the Department of Agriculture to assess fees that fully recover the department's costs for its inspection work. On to Section 15. This defines sod as, or defines nursery stock to not include sod. So this essentially exempts sod growers from nursery stock regulations. And the term sod then is defined on the following page, Section 16. Section 17 is still plant nursery oversight. It's a new definition for the term tropical plant for purposes of Chapter 18H. Section 18 has to do with nursery stock dealer certificates. It allows the person who is exempt from nursery stock certificates. Now, under this change, as I understand it, sections 15, 16, 17, 18 are all Department of Agriculture proposals. And Section 18 lists the requirement for someone to obtain a nursery stock dealer certificate if they meet the criteria in Section 18. Section 19 provides new penalties for a person found operating without a valid nursery stock grower certificate or a nursery stock dealer certificate. These are Department of Agriculture proposals. Section 20 is seed law, Department of Agriculture proposal. It requires persons, initial labelers who sell native grasses and wildflower seed in commercial or agricultural quantities to obtain the same permit and pay the same fee as initial labelers of vegetable, flower, and wildflower seeds. Section 21 is again a department proposal on seed law. It increases fees for seed fee permits and creates a new category for gross sales of $1,001,000,001 and above. You see then below the department changes the unit of measure and then the corresponding fee for certain agricultural seeds sold in bulk. Section 22 on page 23 is also the department's proposal. This is to increase the seed brand name registration fee. And then the bottom of page 23 is new language. It pertains to commercial feed licenses, and it increases the application fee paid by persons required to obtain the license. And on page 24, the end of that section increases the corresponding late fee as well. Section 24 is also new language pertaining to commercial feed, and in this case, pet food. The listing fee that is paid for packages of pet food only sold in packages of 10 pounds or less. This increases the listing fee that's paid in lieu of the inspection fee for both regular pet food and specialty pet food on the bottom of page 24. And then on the top of page 25, the minimum inspection fee that's paid for commercial feed is increased or is proposed to be increased as well. And then section 25 also has to do with the small packages of pet food and specialty pet food. The late fee is increased in this section. Section 26 is from, and that section, if I didn't say it before, that the prior section is new language as well. Section 26, defining HACCP plan, is Department of Agriculture proposed language for Chapter 28A, Retail Food Handlers. Section 27 is Representative Neuberger's bill, create a new exemption for cottage foods. That continues on to the top of page 27. And then section 28 is new language. It pertains to licenses required of milk and cream testers and bulk haulers. It extends the renewal license for a period of 2 years instead of 1 year, and then there's an increase to the fee as well. And the late penalty is also increased. And then there's a change to where this money is deposited, the fee and penalty revenue. Instead of going into the general fund, it would now go into the dairy services account in the ag fund. Section 29 on the bottom of page 27 is new language that increases the milk procurement fee paid by dairy plant operators. On page 28, section 30 is Chair Hamilton's bill, create an Agriculture Research, Education, Extension, and Technology Transfer Board. The language is essentially the same as the committee heard, except based on a discussion in committee, there's some new language about identifying who the commodity councils are for purposes of the board. That's on lines 28.17 and 28.18. And then to clarify for the members of the board where it's not entirely clear who the organizations are, the Commissioner of Agriculture would appoint those members. And let's see, on to page 29. Section 31 is the first of four or five sections that comprise Chair Hamilton's advanced biofuel, renewable chemical, and biomass thermal grant programs. These sections are rewritten a bit to reorganize the material and to split them into subdivisions. So that continues on 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, page 35, and 36. And then the final section is on page 37, the required report on each of the incentive programs, the annual report to the legislature. Section 36 begins a series of governor's proposed changes that have to do with accounting for the application fees paid by farmers to the Rural Finance Authority when applying for RFA loans. And essentially what these do collectively is create a new RFA administrative account. The House File 1437, as introduced, proposed putting these in the Special Revenue Fund. This language would put this account in the Agricultural Fund instead. But otherwise, the language is the same, and you see that there are just changes to essentially all of the RFA statutes for each of their loan programs to say that now the money paid in application fees goes into this new administrative account. And the administrative account then, actually, I skipped that on page 37, that's the new account, and the money in there is appropriated by statute to the Commissioner of Agriculture for administrative expenses. And page 38, section 40, that's a change. Trying to remember which loan program this is, but there was a line in current law that prohibits loans for the refinancing of existing debt. That's the livestock expansion loan program, so that would no longer be prohibited under section 40. Section 41 and 42, those again are changing the accounting of fees paid by applicants for loans. Section 43 expands the disaster recovery loan program that RFA administers to allow loans to be issued to restore farmland. Section 44 on the bottom of 39 is again deposit of fees, application fees. Same with section 45 and section 46 and 7. So that brings us to page 42. The bottom is section 48. This is a change to the pilot, trying to remember the name of this grant program that the legislature created maybe 2013 or 14. It's a new, you know, it's microloan. I think it's just called maybe the microloan program, but the definition of eligible livestock for loan purposes, you can see on the top of page 43, is expanded considerably to be more consistent with other definitions of livestock in Minnesota statutes. Section 49 on page 43, this is a governor's proposal, as were all the prior sections having to do with RFA loans. This would create a new RFA loan called the Farm Opportunity Loan Program to replace and expand upon the Shared Savings Loan Program, which is repealed in this amendment. The Section 50, again, that's just adding a reference to the new loan program in the RFA's revolving loan account where repayments of loans are deposited. Section 51 on page 44 is new language. This allows MinSKU campuses that offer farm business management to specify space availability. Section 52 on the bottom of 44, which continues for multiple pages, is a department proposal to create a new fee for corporate farm exemption filings. That farm would be $15, and it would this would be deposited in the Ag Fund under the amendment in the Special Revenue Fund under the bill. And then that money is appropriated statutorily or automatically to the department for administration of the corporate farm law. And then we have a series of uncodified temporary sections that start on page 46. Section 53 is the Livestock Industry Study, Representative Miller's bill. Section 54 is the Feasibility Study, Representative Swadzinski's bill for importing bait fish for resale. Section 55 is Representative Metz's bill, the Correctional Facility Vocational Training Pilot Program. And Section 56 at the bottom of 47 is requires the Department of Agriculture to convene interested stakeholders and develop a proposal to advance urban agriculture in Minnesota cities. Section 57 on page 48 is from the governor's proposal. It's sort of a transfer of all the separate RFA funds into the new fund that's created, just abolishing the old funds and moving the money into the new centralized fund. And then finally, Section 58 is the repealer. It would eliminate the Shared Savings Loan Program. It would eliminate the two existing cottage food exemptions that are replaced by Representative Neuberger's bill. And it would eliminate the statutory appropriation of $1 million per year to AURI.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. Members, are there any clarification questions for either Mr. Savory or Mr. Sullivan? Would you like to ask them now?
I have something after any question.
After, okay. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I apologize if you went over this before I was in another meeting, but I wanted to go back to Section 30, the Transfer Board. And this is a question I usually ask in other committees, but on the authority, it looks that, you know, we're setting up this board with usual stakeholders or special interest groups, and it's a wide range of special interest groups again, but are they holding a request for proposals and then presenting it to the legislature for the legislature to make the appropriations, or is the board itself have the authority to spend the money?
So, Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Hamilton.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, the board themselves will be making those recommendations. And it's in conjunctions with, get my glasses on here, it's in conjunction with the commissioner and the dean representing Minnesota State Colleges and Universities.
Representative Hansen.
And Madam Chair and Representative Hamilton, you and I have talked about this. Do we have any other precedents? You know, when we look elsewhere in state law, we have the Outdoor Heritage Council that does RFPs and then makes the appropriation recommendations to us, so we're making the appropriations. We have other councils in that. We have other boards and commissions that are based on population and the best available citizens from the state serve. So why have the interests have both the authority and the opportunity to be receiving the dollars? Mm-hmm. Why not have it them make recommendations to the legislature and then we make the appropriations?
Mm-hmm. Chair Hamilton.
Madam Chairman and Mr. Sullivan, we do have some other entities similar to this. There is a precedent set the way I understand it. Is that correct?
Mr. Sullivan.
Madam Chair and Representative Hamilton, the Ag Fertilizer Research and Education Council that is modified in this bill operates in a similar manner where the council reviews proposals and then determines which projects receive grants, and then the actual money is awarded by the Department of Ag.
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair and Representative Hamilton and Mr. Sullivan, that is using fees that they generate versus general fund dollars. Is it correct that this would be general fund dollars that's going into the transfer board that all taxpayers of the state would be paying?
Mr. Sullivan?
Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, that's correct. These are general fund dollars.
Members, is there any other questions we would have for, excuse me, Mr. Sullivan or Mr. Savory? Okay. All right. Mr. Chair, would you, Chairman Hamilton, would you like to hear from testifiers that are in the audience?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I know there's another amendment in here. We're not going to act on any of the other amendments today. I just wanted to speak to that. That was the Board of Animal Health. The Board of Animal Health had their recommendation. I will take full responsibility. When the bill was submitted, we operated off their baseline and not the request, if you will. And so that was an oversight. There is a amendment. I just wanted to address that. But we won't take that up until Tuesday, so with the other amendments as well. So I want to speak to that. Madam Chair, I would like to hear from testifiers. First, Madam Chair, if there's anybody that has felt like they have been excluded in the process, or if there's any bills that have not been heard or anything like that, I would like to hear from those folks first. And then I'd like to hear from them first. In the event there isn't anybody that feels like they've been excluded from the process, then we could take testimony from folks that are either for or against, if we could, please.
Okay. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, just a step before that, because you brought up the Board of Animal Health, I don't understand the processes well enough, but I do believe they're involved with the turkey crisis. And, you know, we haven't spoken about, I just want to bring that up today because, you know, if I read the newspaper correctly, we're now up to the ninth facility, and I guess my question is more to the chair. it seems like we have a growing problem. It was a big problem with the first two facilities, and now it's growing. And I guess I would just ask what your thinking is on how to address that, or is there a role for this committee? It's just kind of an open-ended question, but when I saw the amendment, it kind of made me reflect about that, and I've been thinking about it, and I know Representative Anderson is deeply involved with it. Maybe there's another time for that, but I wanted to bring that up today, and this may be the best time to do that.
Yeah. Well,
Chair Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Johnson, for bringing that up. And first of all, I want to assure the public, we have a fantastic system in place with the Department of Ag, the Board of Animal Health, and the other entities, whether it's the VDL at the University of Minnesota. Wonderful, wonderful people that are all pulling together to address this, not to mention the producers themselves. So I can't stress that enough. This is another reason why you notice the bill that was brought forth for asking for additional dollars, and there's a component in there about rapid response, because we've all discussed the importance of making sure that we're prepared. One of the biggest threats to agriculture is emerging diseases, and so that's where the entities that came together initially and the folks on the board that Representative Hansen and I continue to discuss, that was one of the areas that was extremely important to them to make sure that there was some rapid response language in there. So I want to make it very, very clear, we should be extremely proud of the individuals that are currently in place to address these issues. Highly professional, highly capable, and we just to make sure that they have the resources in order to obtain the objective results. And it was interesting, as soon as we posted this bill online, it was almost immediately I received a text from my dear friend, the attorney standing up there in the back row, Mr. Cruz, and he's like, "What?" You know, and it was an oversight on my part. Again, I will take full responsibility for that, and that's why we drafted the amendment immediately to assure the Board of Animal Health, to assure the public, and all the stakeholders that this is a priority of ours as well. And that's why I posted the amendment, even though we're not going to take it up until Tuesday.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Hamilton. That's, I guess, where I get to the concern about the board, because we could just do an appropriation for rapid response to the Board of Animal Health rather than going to a board of stakeholders to make the decision on where to do the rapid response. So mm-hmm. I know we've got all the stakeholders here in the audience, but the Board of Animal Health could act, and they would have the direct authority by providing them with a rapid response appropriation now, or in a supplemental to do that. And I think that kind of makes the case of when we have an emergency that affects not just the industries, but the whole state and all the taxpayers in the state, having that direct line of accountability versus going to the board of stakeholders, I think it's a better use on the rapid response.
Madam Chairman?
Chair Hamilton.
Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, I understand that. One of the biggest concerns, and I think one of the main drivers of the bill that came forward, is the fear of the ag special and the reductions that have been taking place over the course of time. And we're looking at, it would have been very, very simple, simply to backfill dollars into the ag special and then, you know, wish and whatever that these dollars made it to the uses that we're all extremely, you know, passionate about. The thought process was, at least from my aspect, was if we channel these dollars through the Department of Ag and we also reach out to the stakeholders and use this as additional dollars and or leverage to make sure that these priorities continue to be funded. And I also want to go on record that I have a tremendous amount of respect for the president of the University of Minnesota. I have a tremendous amount of respect for the dean, all the deans on St. Paul campus as well. Dean Brian Boer has been a champion for agriculture. There's no question about it. With that said, I'm also very, very concerned what has happened with the agriculture special. And so these are not dollars that would, you know, it's a whole supplement and supplant. These are additional dollars. We have the resources coming through the Ag Special or these other entities in order to address that. We want additional dollars as well for these needs, for these outbreaks. You have the Department of Agriculture. You have the other groups that do have a vested interest also that would be able to allocate these dollars in addition to that. So that's the thought process behind it, Representative Hansen.
Representative Hansen.
I'll ponder a little bit.
I think we're going to have more discussion than today. Representative Lewis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to provide a little insight into what we did when we had the tuberculosis issue in livestock up in the northwest part of the state. And it's important that we all understand that when you have that disease situation, you know the Board of Animal Health brings a huge amount of expertise with regulatory authority to deal with that, but that instantly became a Department of Ag, DNR, a huge number of agencies. So and ultimately what I saw, and I was on the producer side at that point, spent more time up there, I guess, than I did at home, was that the Department of Agriculture has a uniquely broader set of shoulders than the Board of Animal Health. And when you get into that circumstance where you've got the animal health professionals out there in the field beating their brains out trying to deal with this, you really need that other huge Department of Agriculture shoulders to just sort out and make sure they're focused on the very unique expertise that they have. And I can think of one of the guys that spent a lot of time up there was Deputy or Assistant Commissioner Joe Martin, spent up in the Northwest as a representative of the Department of Agriculture, just sorting out those big shoulder things so that the experts can deal with what they bring to the table. So that emergency response in something and the avian the poultry issue takes on that same dimension almost instantly because it's not located in one area and there's a lot of other issues just besides the health issue with the birds as far as setting up situations where you don't move products. But again, my experience, and thank goodness, tuberculosis in livestock is a slow-moving disease. You have to have that big, broad-shouldered approach when you're dealing with something like this. And like I say, I was very impressed from the producer standpoint as we dealt with this for 5 years on how much that Department of Agriculture and that huge working group of commodity groups and everybody else that met literally weekly for a time up there at Roseau and War Road and up in that whole area trying to figure out how best to get this thing back in the box. So I just wanted to make that comment that what I saw, you know, several years ago on a 5-year effort to get tuberculosis back in the box. So we learned some things there about that broad approach and making sure that those commodity groups or whatever you want to call them are at the table directly involved in this because it turns out it's their livestock that you're dealing with. So, thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, I noticed on the news today that the department that is examining the avian bird flu went from 3 people testing daily to around the clock. They do over 100 tests, not 3 people, but 3 tests a day to around the clock, over 100 a day. So they're very busy in that department. Members, I think we would like to go to those people who did not maybe feel they were heard or concerned. Oh, excuse me. We gotta pause for one break. Representative Miller has something to share.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks for my interruption. But in honor of my wife's birthday and my daughter making cookies and me having to get rid of these, I'm going to pass these around. Everyone that's in the audience, my daughter makes these every week. These are going to go to the members first. I'm sorry. And then if there's any more, just continue to pass them around. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Miller. So, Chair Hamilton, you would like to hear from those who feel they have not been able to be heard or would like some more input?
Well, absolutely, Madam Chair. And I don't know if there is anybody. We've simply tried to be as inclusive as we possibly can. And I believe everybody who wanted to have a hearing, their bill heard, I believe we did grant that. And I just want to, if there's anybody out there, not to testify for or against the bill per se, but just if there's somebody or anybody who feels like they have not had a chance to offer input in the process.
Okay. Is there anyone that would like to address the committee at this time? Sir, would you like to? Would you please identify yourself and who you represent?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Don Pereira. I am the Chief of Fisheries for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. The Minnesota DNR has concerns what originally was House File 1845, which we did not have a chance to offer comment on. And that that bill has now been incorporated into House File 1437 as Section 54, which is calling upon a number of agencies led by the Department of Agriculture and also Natural Resources to undergo a feasibility study to evaluate importing bait fish into the state for resale. That currently is not allowed in the state of Minnesota. We do allow the importation of bait fish either to be fed to captive fish that are being raised or for export back out of the state. And if that does occur, this has to happen in facilities that meet certain critical biosecurity requirements, so these organisms cannot be released into the wild. And that is simply because we now know that the interstate transport of aquatic organisms, including live bait, is a very serious vector for the accidental introduction of invasive species, including new pathogens as well. And I draw your attention to basically the long history of the Minnesota legislature and other bodies in the state that have put a lot of energy into trying to control aquatic invasive species, their accidental introduction into the state, and inadvertent transport across the state. For example, the legislature directed the DNR in 2012 to do a study to evaluate the inadvertent introduction and transfer of invasive carp. These would be big head carp and silver carp into the state and movement between water bodies in the state. We released that report in 2013. That report concluded that the highest risk of introduction through live fish transportation comes from wild mineral harvest from rivers and streams and subsequent movement of minnows as bait. Now, one of the primary interests in importing farmed minnows from elsewhere is a shortage of golden shiners, especially in the winter by ice anglers. I would like to inform you that the primary source of farmed golden shiners in the United States is Arkansas. Arkansas is ground zero for aquatic invasive species. The state of Arkansas is the state that introduced all four of the Asian carp species that are causing considerable harm today. They were introduced for use in polyculture systems as part of the very large industry to raise channel catfish for human consumption. So there's considerable risk in what is being proposed. I also want to draw your attention to two other studies. One was published in 2012. This is graduate work done at the University of Wisconsin that clearly showed that imported, cultured, and wild-harvested bait fish from Wisconsin dealers are infected with several fish pathogens which can cause disease in wild fish populations. Very recently, the energetic research group at University of Notre Dame, led by Dr. Chris Jurdy, published a paper that clearly showed the bait trade remains a potential pathway for invasive species introductions in the Great Lakes region. And finally, in closing, I want to draw your attention to, for example, what the DNR has done to control the movement of VHS into inland waters of the state. VHS is a virus that's referred to as viral hemorrhagic septicemia. It's believed that this virus originated in intensive pen culture systems, possibly over in Europe, subsequently spread to the United States. It's throughout the Great Lakes Basin. Our other Great Lakes states have experienced fairly widespread fish die-offs from VHS. We know that it exists in Tulabi or Cisco or Lake Herring and the waters of Lake Superior. So we have that virus on our doorstep. This virus is often referred to as the Ebola of the fish world. We've taken pretty dramatic measures to control the inland spread of VHS from Lake Superior inland. We closed down. We have very careful control of the use of bait, such as Cisco and smelt, which are VHS-sensitive species. We've even gone so far as to close down our own walleye spawning run on the St. Louis River to prevent the accidental inadvertent importation of this pathogen into inland waters of the state. So we have grave concern not just about the accidental introduction of Asian carp into the state, but also a number of new pathogens, some of which we probably don't even know about yet.
Thank you. Chair Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'd just like to remind everybody that we did have a public hearing on that. It was posted in time. We did have a public hearing. And I would ask if the DNR could review that and listen to the testimony as well. This is a study to where we can address and answer a lot of these questions. So thank you for the testifier.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So, Madam Chair, is there anyone else who feels like they have not been a part of the process? Otherwise, we can take testimony from folks who are either for or against. Hopefully, and then after that, Madam Chair, I'd like to walk through, because there are going to be some amendments, so I can give the group a heads up on what some of those will be. But let's hear from folks who would like to testify either for or against. I believe we have a list. Madam Chair, you can just go ahead and call them down if you'd like.
So is Mr. Gardner, Gary Gardner, here? Would you like to join us? And then just so you know, Julie, is it Poole? If she's around, she would be next. So, Mr. Gardner, please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Chair Hamilton. My name is Gary Gardner. I'm a professor in the Department of Horticultural Science at the University of Minnesota. I also serve as one of two faculty legislative liaisons for the university, but I want to make clear that my testimony today expresses my own opinions, and I'm not reflecting the opinions necessarily of the university or of CFANS. I had the fortune of being here at the committee meetings earlier in the week to hear the discussion about what was then HF 779, and now is Section 30 of this bill. And I really thought, and when Dean Board described work in the college several weeks ago now, I really thought this was a fantastic bill, and I really am grateful to those who crafted it. And I think it can have a major impact on agricultural productivity. Let me give you a little bit about my background, because my concern, which surfaced this past week, is about the makeup of the board. And to me, as a researcher in agriculture, I see everything as a continuum. Before I came to the university, I was in the ag chem industry for 14 years with Shell, DuPont, and Abbott Labs. I came here as head of the Department of Horticultural Science. I served in that role for 11 and a half years. In that role, separate from that role, I also served on the peer review board for the Minnesota Soybean Growers Research and Promotion Council for their grant program. In the same token, I'm a member of the Minnesota Grape Growers Association Board of Directors, and I was on the search committee that hired two new faculty members in sustainable and organic production of vegetables. I'm involved in a project with Marla Spivak in entomology on understanding aspects of propolis that bees collect to reduce diseases in the hive. So my own areas of research really stem the range from very applied to very fundamental, and from traditional agricultural productivity to novel forms where they involve new technology or new sustainable practices. And what I want to emphasize is that research in agriculture is a continuum. What's important in this new board is innovation and impact. It's not, I don't see, and I don't think any of us should see this as a pie that so much is going to go to this crop and so much is going to that crop, but it's really about what are the innovative strategies that are going to help all agriculture succeed in the future. Let me give you one little example that Mr. Schoenfeld talked about when he testified earlier in the week. His wife works at Waseca, and she works on a project with a colleague of mine, that Vince Fritz, on compounds in brassica that have been shown in animal systems to prevent cancer. These are compounds are called the glucosinolates. Well, how is that relevant to major commodity crops? Canola is a brassica, brassica rapa. And so if we understand how these compounds work in one set of plants, then perhaps we can find a way either to improve the compounds, or sometimes these compounds in feed crops actually are deterrent to animal feeding, so you might want to eliminate them or reduce them. So I think understanding the fundamental aspects on a crop that may not be one of the biggest dollar crops in Minnesota actually can help us solve problems that can help our major commodity crops in Minnesota. I think the strength of Minnesota agriculture has been its diversity. We're not corn and soybeans like Illinois or Iowa. We're not wheat like some of the plant states. We really have a broad range of animal and plant agriculture in this state, and that's what makes our state strong in terms of agriculture productivity. I'd be happy to answer any questions about any of this stuff.
Members, do you have any questions? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I'm maybe a little old-fashioned that I thought the land-grant institution was supposed to be working for the public, the people of Minnesota, not just the commodity groups.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, but your testimony was about commodities and helping the commodity groups, and the board is made up of
people,
special interest commodity groups, not the general public, not the Board of Regents, not legislators, but people representing interests. And every time we do a board here, they divide the pie up. Every time we do a board that's made up with special interests, they divide the pie by the special interests. Maybe this will be different, but our past practice has been different.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Gardner.
I absolutely agree with you. And I think that we as a whole, whether we live in the metro or we live in rural Minnesota, at the University of Minnesota, we have to serve the whole public of the state of Minnesota. And that absolutely applies to agriculture. In our college, we have the Minnesota Landscape Arboretum. One of the major programs of the Arboretum for the last 25 years has been a children's education program that serves now, I think, about 40,000 elementary school kids. And the main aspect of that program is there's a greenhouse out in the Children's Learning Center. If you haven't been there, it's a wonderful place, separate from the main area, that has food crops planted. And the little kids go out there and they learn about the plants that their food comes from. So, you know, I see this, as I said, as a continuum. It's not about commodity groups. I want to make sure that when we talk about a board, we don't view it as this pie that's divided up, but we view it as how we serve the people as a whole.
And Madam Chair.
Chair Hamilton.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Hansen. I do appreciate the dialogue, absolutely. The thing that I struggle with is that these are people as well. And if you have, I served on the pork producers, for instance. It was large and small, and they were all people. People just happened to be where their expertise lied in pork production, you know. And so when we talk about commodity groups, it's not a faceless, nameless group of folks. It's not. It is made up of people. And that just happened to be, you know, their area of expertise or passion or interest happens to lie in that one realm. So, I appreciate the testimony, because I think the take-home from that is that everybody will benefit. Everybody will benefit regardless of what method you want to choose on how you want to raise, whether you're talking about organics or traditional or conventional or whatever, however you want to raise it, it's up to you. But this would apply to everybody. It's not excluding anybody. Everybody. It is a land-grant university, and everybody will benefit from it. And that's the intent for me as an author. And I think that would be, I don't want to speak for the university, just like you don't either, but that is obviously the intent of the university as being a land-grant university. This is for everybody. And that is, again, the intent of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Terry. Yes, the research that they do also is very public for everyone to use in Minnesota. So, and advances agriculture. So, Representative Bly, do you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Chair. And the discussion prompted some of my thinking, and there's no question, I think we have a lot of support for the research funding, making sure that we get more money into research. One of the concerns I had, and since you're here, I can ask you this. The research the university does is dependent on the staff that they have and that they can hold on to. And again, nothing's perfect. There's always going to be pros and cons. But is it your view that the board and the way that it would choose projects or whatever gets in the way of the university hiring the staff that they ongoing staff that they need? And you stress the ongoing nature of the research that you do. And that's one of the questions I had about the board. Does it get in the way of that? And could you respond to that kind of question?
Madam Chair, Mr. Gardner.
Representative Bly. That's a good question. I think the details, at least as it's written now in Section 30, this bill doesn't really specify exactly how those decisions will be made. And I think that's a really important issue to be able, whether those rules are crafted by the Department of Agriculture or whether they're in legislation. I think that's really important to make sure that the projects are funded on a merit basis and not by some sort of, pardon the expression, pork barrel allocations. And I have concerns that could happen. But also, I think, is that, you know, when I was serving on the peer review board for the soybean growers, I argued strenuously for long-term science that would impact the quality down the line. And the soybean growers 20 years ago funded Nevin Young in the Department of Plant Pathology, and he's become one of the leading genomics experts at the university and in the country in soybean genomics. So sort of a fund, they're not mutually exclusive in terms of the quality of science. And I think it has to be the quality of the science and its potential innovation and impact in terms of agricultural productivity that ought to be the criteria that decide what gets funded. And, you know, the how isn't written in what's in front of me now, and I hope that's going to be done in a way that really rewards merit as opposed to some other kind of criteria.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Gardner. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Julie Poole. Is she here? Oh, there she is. Please identify yourself and for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jamie Poole, president of the Minnesota Grocers Association. We are a state trade association representing the food industry of Minnesota for over 117 years. We have over 200 retail members with nearly 1,100 stores statewide and about 100 wholesale and manufacturer partners. The food industry is the backbone of Minnesota's economy. We provide one out of 20 jobs in our state. Minnesota has a unique culture with hundreds of small, independent, and locally owned grocery and convenience stores, which again are the cornerstone of their communities. We are home to an abundant array of food manufacturers. They create jobs, support local charities, and provide a safe and responsible shopping experience. As an industry, our number one priority is to provide a safe and responsible shopping experience. We have a deep commitment to going above and beyond to ensure that we are manufacturing, producing, and selling the safest products possible. We invest in third-party audits, hire food safety specialists, create a culture where our associates are given the necessary tools needed to keep our facilities, stores, and products safe. This is just a small sample of the voluntary activities that are done to ensure the integrity of the food we sell in Minnesota. We recognize the challenges that Chair Hamilton and this committee have faced as members address the state's budget. Many difficult decisions have been made to create a budget that recommendation that is fiscally and socially responsible and that handles the pressures of the needs and wants of all constituencies. Like the legislature, the food industry of Minnesota, with a multitude of increased costs and profit margins of around 1%, has to manage similar difficult decisions to stay viable. As an industry, we greatly appreciate the approach presented in the Agricultural Omnibus Budget Bill in regards to the proposed fee increases that were included in the Governor's budget recommendations from the Department of Agriculture, Dairy, and Food Inspection Division. These fees would have resulted in millions of dollars of direct cost on the food industry of Minnesota, and that would have had a direct impact on all areas of the food supply chain from farm to fork. We have always appreciated a collaborative approach in working with the Department of Agriculture. We as an industry hold a multitude of positions on the Governor's Food Safety Task Force and have worked diligently over the past decade to update Minnesota's food code. We're not quite there yet, but we're getting there. We share a common goal, providing Minnesotans with a safe food supply. We believe this bill delivers the resources to continue to ensure mutual successes. Again, we appreciate the challenge that you face in crafting House File 1437, and we ask as you move forward to support this proposal. I'm happy to stand for questions, and again, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Poole. And members, do you have any questions? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to check on the cottage food section if the grocers were okay with that section.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, I would first like to state that Representative Newberg and the stakeholders have done a fabulous job of bringing everyone together, and we have been a part of the dialogue as we move forward. And as it stands, we certainly have had our issues addressed.
Chairman Hamilton.
Madam Chair and Representative Hansen and to the testifier as well, we've been working with Representative Neuberger. We've been receiving a few phone calls, some people that have concerns with the language, and it's individuals that don't hit those high-level thresholds, and they're concerned about that additional fee increase. I anticipate amendment coming forth that will roll it back to where it originally was, in essence, at that $5,000 amount, but also add in the addition you go higher, and that's when the fee will increase. We're working with all the stakeholders right now, just anticipate an amendment coming forth that'll clearly define to address the concerns that the individuals that just sell a little bit out of their garden or whatever the case may be that they brought forward. So not huge major changes, but there will be an amendment probably coming forward.
Thank you. Ms. Boole, did you have a comment?
And Madam Chair, the only thing that our greatest concern was that there was some level of food safety standard carried forth and that would still be met. So thank you.
Absolutely.
Any other questions, members? Thank you, Ms. Boole. Amanda Billick, is that it? Welcome, and would you identify yourself for the record, please?
Yes, absolutely. My name is Amanda Billick, and I'm here today representing the Great Plains Institute and the Bioeconomy Coalition of Minnesota. Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to provide some testimony on the bill. So my comments are on the appropriations and the policy for the advanced biofuel, renewable chemical, and biomass thermal production incentives. On behalf of the Bioeconomy Coalition and our members, I would like to thank you for including this important policy and appropriation for the program and the omnibus bill. The Coalition has been working actively to advance this policy over the last 2 years, maybe a little bit more. And I would just like to take some time to extend some specific thank yous to several people who have helped to really get us this far. Chair Hamilton, first, I'd really like to thank you for your leadership on this issue and carrying the bill this year. You also are co-author of the bill last year, and I also want to thank you for your willingness to work with all the stakeholders and the committee members on crafting the policy language and also the compromise agreements to make this a policy with broad bipartisan and broad stakeholder support. Representative Poppe, I also want to thank you for your leadership. You carried the bill last year, and you have been working with the coalition members in the interim, and then also you've continued to support and advocate for the bill this year as a co-author. I would also like to thank Chair Anderson, who isn't here, but also Vice Chair Keel and Representatives Metza and Johnson for also co-authoring the legislation. And really, I want to thank all of the committee members for discussing this policy with myself or with the coalition members as we work to get it through the process. So thank you very much. And I also just want to extend a few thank yous to some of the coalition members and supporters who have worked really hard with Chair Hamilton and the committee members to help craft this policy and have really continued to come to the table over the last 2 years or more. So thank you to the corn growers, the Minnesota Farmers Union, the Minnesota Biofuels Association, the Farm Bureau, and also the Minnesota Environmental Partnership. This really was made possible by all these folks. So this is really an important policy that we think will continue to Minnesota's leadership in biofuels and will also capture opportunities for advanced biofuel production and take advantage of important new value-added opportunities like renewable chemical production and biomass thermal. And this will use Minnesota's abundant agriculture and forestry feedstocks and really create economic opportunity in communities all across the state of Minnesota. As we've previously testified in this committee and also the Ag Policy Committee, the production incentive programs do have significant economic opportunity in Minnesota over the next several years. And the amended language that is currently in the bill and was previously adopted by this committee also builds in some requirements for increasing the percentage of agriculture biomass to come from perennials and cover crops for cellulosic ethanol production. This really also helped to expand the support of this policy. And it's important because since this will be an ongoing program and will require funding authorizations in future years, as bioindustrial development ramps up and expands, more projects are going to be built and become eligible. So it's important to have the strongest support possible for the program and to ensure its long-term success. So thank you very much to the committee members and Chair Hamilton for including the production incentive and policy and funding into the bill, and we look forward to continuing to work with you and the department and coalition members and supporters as it moves through the rest of the process. Thank you. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Fielder. Representative Bly, do you have a question?
Just a comment. I want to thank you, Representative, or Chair Hamilton, for considering some of my concerns about really about water and also the inclusion of perennial and those kinds of crops in the bill. And it's come a long way from when I first heard about it a couple of years ago, and I am pleased with your willingness to work with us on that. So thank you.
Madam Chair and Representative Bly, thank you.
Okay, Mr. Chair. Any other members that have questions? All right. Thank you, Ms. Miller. Appreciate that. Mr. Peterson, Tom Peterson, you want to come down and welcome and identify yourself for the record, please. After Chair Hamilton talks to him.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, I'm just telling him what to say. No, I'm just teasing.
I was just going to remind you this was a public meeting.
Yeah, just
Mr. Peterson, would you please identify yourself for the record?
Madam Chair and members, my name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union. And we appreciate the opportunity to comment on this bill or amendment. We've been sharing this with our members today, and luckily we do a Friday afternoon conference call with our county presidents, and we do anticipate supporting the bill as it comes out of committee next week. And we're still looking at certain provisions of it. It's never a perfect work, but in general, when we started and met with Chair Hamilton before session started, we laid out several of our top priorities for the legislative session, and those included things that come from our county conventions when we meet with our members. So the wolf depredation, obviously, as you've heard, is a very big priority. The other one that surprised me as I was meeting last fall was the need for more meat inspectors, as we'd have our farmers that are all over the state. It was always a common denominator. People would say, you know, it's really frustrating to have to wait and not be able to schedule my time. And so that was really helpful. And so we really appreciate recognizing that and putting that into that into the legislation. Our big thing, I would just say, is we would just get right into it, is the agri-fund, because that is really the big thing. The base is always there, and it's good to see things like Minnesota Grown Dairy Development Teams, those base funding. But the thing that, you know, we've worked on for the whole time I've been here too, is how do we capture those funds? How do we keep them in agriculture, that were the ethanol producer payments? And so, you know, I think a lot of us in this room, farm groups, legislators, worked hard to keep that and create that agri-fund, and that it is a good piece. And I know that the ag groups, including Farmers Union, we came with a request for more dollars for research because of the ag special and frustration, and felt like this is the best way to do it, is to come into the ag fund, to the ag committee. And I will say that Farmers Union, we are disappointed that there was not a higher target in the committee. We kind of were hoping that there would be, and that we are going to have to chip away at Agri to do what we also wanted to do. And so I think that is something that, just as you consider and we'll continue to look at and work on, I realize the limits that are placed on you, and you have to figure that out. I always just remind people that the other piece is within Agri, you know, some of the changes that we're looking at besides the board, and glad to see Representative Hansen came back in, because I think the board has been something in the research part that we've talked about. And in general, Farmers Union, we've always tried to change our mentality when it comes to boards. I think we're on over 20-some different boards. And so our goal has been to get staff off the board and to put citizens in those places. And I was just sitting here thinking, like, the Clean Water Council, AFRAC, Noxious Weed Task Force, ACRA, RFA, Food Safety Defense Task Force, Next Gen Energy Board. Those are all, instead of being even placed with staff or leadership from our office, we've replaced all those with farmers, you know, and they take time out of their busy schedule. And I always think that's interesting. They take time out of their schedule, come in and do those meetings sometimes all day. A lot of times, if you're coming from Northwest Minnesota, as you know, it's 2 days because you got to drive down and drive back. So appreciate, you know, working on that. On Agri, our priorities have always been the livestock grants, the value-added grants. We see that those go out all over the state. They help all different size farmers. They help all different size businesses. And they really do truly add value. And that was one of the other pieces. The one piece that I think is important that's in the bill, too, is the inclusion of the what Ms. Bylick was just stating was the bioeconomy pieces. And we appreciate those being forward. That was, I think, and one of the original intentions when we were thinking about how do we capture and move forward with the next generation ethanol, whether you like ethanol or not. We were successful in building an ethanol industry in our state with the funds that the state chose to invest in that. And we did create a business. And so I think we're going down the right step in funding that piece. I will leave it at that. We have some other pieces that we look forward to continuing to look at, but in general, we appreciate the work that Chair has done. And again, we would have, you know, liked to have seen a higher target. We would like to see Agri stay whole and not have to use the research dollars from that, but that's something we'll have to continue to discuss. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Members, do we have any questions for Representative Hansen?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Peterson. You know, I appreciate what you're saying. I also remember, you know, over the years here with Agri, we didn't want it to turn into an earmark festival. And, you know, when I read through the bill, we've got a lot of earmarks coming out of Agri now and versus merit-based. And, you know, that's a way of dividing the pie, which, you know, gets to the larger issue here when we farm things out. Now, when the Commissioner of Ag has the accountability, we have the trail of accountability that's there with Agri, which over the last 2 years we've fought about dramatically to keep that ability to be merit-based. So the target is what it is. It's higher than other targets. I mean, I've got to go find the bill where I'm lead, and I think that's got a big cut versus an increase. So, I mean, how do we flip positions here where we said we got to keep this pure, we got to keep it on merit, and then when we start doing 25 here, 75 there, 150 here. I mean, how do we reconcile that?
Mr. Peterson?
Madam Chair, I wish I had a good answer for you. Farmers Union would prefer that the way that Agri was set up last year, you know, that or the 2 years ago, that we not earmark, that we give it as a pool, and we say here's the things that are important to us, and that we're not. Those are all good things that are I think all of them are that are put in there, and we wish those would be general fund and not necessarily coming out of the Agri portion of that. And I wish I had a better answer for you. I also, I'm glad you asked the question, so I had one more chance to add that The one disappointment we had, obviously, is there's no money for the industrial hemp project in here. And I know that's a tough issue. I think that, you know, if between now and the floor, that some dollars could be found to move that forward. I think that it would be wise for the state. It's something Farmers Union has supported, and I just encourage the committee to consider that. I think 13 new authors were added to the bill this last week, and there's tremendous support for it, and we don't want to get left behind. Thank you.
Chair Hamilton, do you have any comments?
Well, I'm a strong supporter of industrial hemp as well. I believe it's moving through the process currently, and yeah, I don't know what's going to happen, so stay tuned.
Representative Johnson, would you like to?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. First, a comment on the industrial hemp. I joyfully spent some time up in Wadena County this last week, and where I get to read the Fargo Forum, and there was a front page article extolling the glee that Minnesota, North Dakota has in establishing industrial hemp, and it seemed to have absolutely no trouble, and it was the farmers in North Dakota were seen as a true asset. So just a comment on that. I also, you know, on the Agri-Fund, I just like to probe a little bit because I have seen, you know, you talk about livestock and value added, and I think about the Agri-Funds that have been spent in my district, and I see it improving livestock and value added agriculture and some small operations that just are doing really well, and it's pretty important. Could you expand, do you see the, could you talk a little bit more about what the impact here will be on those two items, or are they sustained, do you think, or just a little more comment would be helpful to me.
Mr. Peterson.
Madam Chair and Representative Johnson, I guess I'm still trying to understand from the department to the impact on it, but overall it looks like we're, you know, are taking money out of the Agri-Fund, and the language changes and we talked about this with Farmers Union today, that it makes sense to us that part of it, with the big chunks of money that were in there, where there was a pot for research, there was a pot for next gen energy grants, that those were doing some other things with maybe that portion of it. And so we're hopeful that we're committed to have the dollars would still be there for the livestock investment grants and the value added grants, because I've seen the interest in the value added grants and the livestock grants. I truly we've been able to score review some of them in different things. The department goes through a very long scoring process, and over the years Farmers Union, Farm Bureau, other groups have been part of some of those, and it's exciting to see the investment that people are willing to take. And I just talked to a young farmer today, a dairy farmer, and he's going to the bank today, and his banker was interested in if that was going to help him, that 10% on a project he's working on. They thought that's really exciting. His banker was really interested in that. So that's our hope, you know, and that's something I want to, you know, continue to flesh out here in the next week as this bill leaves committee, and have a good commitment that there's dollars there, especially for that in the value-added grant program.
Thank you. Representative Johnson, okay. Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Next, Mr. Scogan, Dan Scogan, would you like to come up? Welcome, and would you identify yourself for the record, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dan Scogan, representing AURI. I'd just like to start by saying that I see a lot of exciting things in this bill, things that AURI can get involved in, and some of our clients have already indicated that they're excited about some of the opportunities that present themselves. But AURI is very concerned about a 30% cut in our funding. We're concerned on many fronts. A reduction of this size to a research institute of our size puts in jeopardy high-impact projects that are already in progress in all corners of the state of Minnesota. Projects that we know will take agriculture products, will add value, will create wealth and jobs in parts of the state that are often overlooked when it comes to innovation. A reduction of this size puts parts of our staff in jeopardy. Highly trained intellectual individuals who every day put their best foot forward to make sure we're adding value to Minnesota's agriculture by helping develop new products and new processes. A reduction of this size puts in jeopardy our ability to leverage funds with other groups and organizations, both public and private. It will hinder our ability to cost share. A reduction of this size puts in jeopardy relationships with statewide farm organizations, commodity groups, other research organizations, and partners who have come to expect us to be available when people that they serve need services. I believe in the work that AURI does. I know our staff does, and our clients certainly do. And I believe AURI has members on this committee who believe that we have an important part to play in the next big thing in agriculture. I'll conclude with this. We need more money. We need higher targets on this side of the ledger. And I know that Chair Hamilton has done everything he can to protect us as much as he can, but in the end, money does make a difference. And I can feel for him in that I have sat in his chair at times and had to make those same decisions. But it is disappointing to AURI that in a year when additional money was made available to agriculture, we were asked to take a 30% cut in funding. It's not the end of the road for us. I plan to continue to work with this committee and with others in this building on solutions that will keep our good work moving forward.
Thank you, Mr. Scogan. Members, do you have any questions for Dan at this time?
Thank you.
I will make a plea to Chair Hamilton to consider funding more of AURI because I think it is a good program for Minnesota and connection to our production agriculture along with a future. So thank you. Chair Hamilton, or is there any other in the audience that would like to testify? Anybody else? Please come forward and identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. I'm just getting my instructions. I'm Bobby King from the Land Stewardship Project.
I'm sorry, just for the record.
Just
I'm
joking.
Not
just
telling
joking.
People on what to say.
No, he's not telling us what to say. I just want to testify on a section of the bill, and I want to testify about the research board that's being created. And I want to say I and my colleague Paul Sobosinski had a good meeting with Chair Hamilton yesterday about our concerns, and I felt like We got a little heated, and then we settled down, and we realized we have the same goal, that we both feel strongly, and LSP's worked for this in the past, that the UN needs more research dollars and for agriculture, and that probably the only way to get that money is, or really the only way to get that money at this point, is for it to come out of ag finance and be directed to the MDA with strings. So that concept makes sense, and we've actually advocated for that concept before, so we support that idea. We met after it was too late to change any of the language that was in this omnibus, but I do want to acknowledge that there are two changes to the structure of the board that we feel are an improvement and appreciate being made. There are two new members of the board, a sustainable organic ag organization and an environmental organization, and those are issues that Representative Johnson brought up and Representative Bly and we brought up in that address, and also now the commissioner appoints the members. And we went on to talk about our other concerns, and correct me if I'm wrong after I'm done here, Chair Hamilton, but my understanding was Chair Hamilton said he understands them and we're going to continue working to get them addressed. And I just want to mention the two that we spent the most time on. The way the bill's structured now, where the money can go is open-ended, and we'd like to see some walls around it, so it is going for ag research at the university, at Minsku, and maybe there's some other entities that should be included in there, but for us, it's definitely the university in Minsku that we're most interested in. And the emphasis in the bill was on productivity, And we felt like it would be good to add the word sustainability, because one of the challenges facing agriculture going forward is not only how do we produce more, but how do we produce more and keep our water clean, actually clean the water. We know there are ways to do agriculture that not only keep the water clean, but clean it. And how do we maintain our soil health while we produce, continue to produce more? So we were interested in that, and Representative Hamilton indicated, Chair Hamilton indicated his willingness to continue to talk to us about it. The issue of one of the tough things about this issue of getting more money to the university through this committee is the issue of money. And, you know, higher ed has a large target, but it's very difficult to get that ag special raised. And we've tried, and it has been raised in a while. So I appreciate the concept of trying to getting the money through this committee. And, of course, I think we'd all be a lot happier with this bill if the target was larger, and maybe there's a way to accomplish that between now and the conference committee, or coming out of the conference committee, or on the floor. But I want to say on the last thing I'll say on this board is that in the Senate approach now is there is no board. The commissioner will be making the decisions, but the U does have to consult with agricultural organizations in order to be considered. And the very last thing I'll say is that everyone's indicated that this money is most needed for faculty. And I don't know how to fix this, but I think there's a challenge to fund faculty on a grant-based system. And I don't know how we figure that, but I think everyone's interested in figuring that out. Thanks.
Thank you. Do anyone have questions for Mr. King?
Chair
Hamilton.
Well, thank you. It did get heated, and the individuals outside the office probably heard us both, right? And but that's what it's all about. And we also smiled and shook hands and moved on. You know, and like he had said, you have my commitment to keep working with everybody. We may or may not come to an agreement on when it's all said and done on absolutely everything. You know, I fully understood when he was talking, but not limited to, and when Mr. King raised the concerns about that open-ended language, it made sense. It was not my intent. On some of the examples that he brought forth, wasn't anybody's intent, right? But it would be a possibility, depending on who interpreted the language. And so through that, we were able to find common ground on a lot of things, And again, it's all about communication. It's continue working on this. And I know Mr. King and the group that he represents are very, very passionate on sustainable and the word sustainable. And you know, I'm researching it now and going through it, and even in this bill, there's dollars available through the Agri account that it deals with sustainable ag. And so the point I'm trying to make is that the bill that we brought forward was production ag, and so it's focused on production. And it's we do have a number of other accounts and everything else that deals with sustainability or that area, and then we'll work together. I mean, it can all come together. I mean, within the bill, we have Representative Bly. We have language about the Forever Green and stuff too. I mean, I can see where all this goes hand in hand. So it is a process. It is a process, and we'll keep working, just like you had said.
Thank you. Any other members? Right. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to address the committee? Representative Bly.
Thank you, Chair. And Chair Hamilton, I'm sure you've talked with the department about the changes to Agri. It would help me if the department felt comfortable coming forward just to say how they felt about some of those changes. That would help me if you wouldn't mind.
So no, I don't mind. You know, it's like I said, you know, total transparency. I'll tell these guys what to say. No, I'm just teasing. If this is televised or anything else, I'm just kidding. I would like to say it's been great and to work with Mr. Santo Cruz, and Commissioner Fredrickson is fantastic. There's no question about it. We do have other commissioners and department directors here. It is. We've got, this is why agriculture is so fun. Chairing the Ag Committee as well, because there's great people involved, and we're going to continue to work. I already know what Mr. Cruz is going to say. He's going to stand up and say, well, we support the governor's position on this, but we'll continue working with Representative Hamilton, right? Am I close?
Now you just have to say Santo Cruz for the record. You're done.
Oh, Santo, he's Santo Cruz for the record, and then he represents Department of Ag. So.
Mr. Cruz, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Keel. Santo Cruz, Minnesota Department of Agriculture, for the record. Yes, we do support the governor's budget. We do want to keep our base funding and programs to Agri intact. We do think there are huge successes there. You know, and if I can be quoted by the chair, maybe I'll quote the chair myself, and that is, we don't want to take down one part of agriculture to build up another. We want it all. We want to expand the pie, and we need higher targets.
Yes, we need to keep carrying that message, correct? Any questions for Mr. Cruz?
Thank you.
Former commissioner? No. Are there any questions from the members? Chair Hamilton. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hamilton, I just wanted to say thanks to you and your staff and everybody for getting one little piece in the bill that's pretty important to my part of the state, the wolf and the elk depredation. Thank you.
Okay. Chair Hamilton, we are going to continue this discussion, I believe, on Tuesday with your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, that's right. And we are working, I'm working very closely with Representative Karen Clark. Her and I are both very, very passionate about urban agriculture. And I know Commissioner Fredrickson is very supportive and very passionate about that as well. We did take in consideration what members of this committee brought forth to make that even better. But I want to assure the individuals that have been here advocating on behalf of urban agriculture, the department, and again, if I'm saying anything out of turn, please come down and correct me. The department is absolutely committed, and the way that the message that came back to me, and again, if I mislead anybody, please let me know. The department has said they're going to reach out to the vested interests, and they're going to talk about and assist with grant writing, and because a lot of these entities are currently eligible for the funds that are available, and they may or may not know how to go about, you know, applying and securing those. And then I want also put on the record that I would like the department give them a little more directive, if you will, to focus on this area as well. I mean, let's continue to reach out and build that. And there'll probably be coming forth an amendment around that too, because I think one of the things that Representative Clark had talked about is that I don't think anywhere is there a definition about urban agriculture. And so how about we start there and define what urban agriculture is? And then this committee that's reaching out to a committee or the study that's reaching out to the individuals, the stakeholders that are interested, they could help us redefine that as well and craft this language so that we get it and get it right. Representative Metza, I hijacked your bill, and when I say that, because we changed the language a little bit, softened it up, and whatever else, it still does the same thing, right? It just will eliminate any hit pieces against us. I'm not kidding about that one, you know?
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to thank Chair Hamilton for including that. I know it was a grand idea that moved really quick, and I appreciate our continued efforts to work on making it less hittable.
Well, and Madam Chair, to that
Chair
point,
Hamilton.
It was, excuse me, I went out to the, I think it was the Lamb and Wool event they had, the annual event. And there's individuals up in your area that said they had a short of places where things could be processed, right? And it's absolutely critical that we do something around that so that individuals do have a place to have, you know, have their, you know, go through the processing facilities. So this is something, well, again, I think it's the right thing to do. So we changed the verbiage around that a little bit so it didn't look like Friday the 13th or, you know, or anything like that. And hopefully we can get that passed. So With that, Madam Chair, I think what we'll end up doing is, or I know what we'll end up doing. Anybody, if you have any amendments or what, we're going to be taking those up. Make sure you get them into to staff as quickly as we can so that we can get those posted, get them drawn up, get them posted as well. Our goal, I believe, is Tuesday at 3-4.
Oh. Amendments are due Monday at 3.
All right. Amendments are due Monday at 3. And I want to thank, staff as well. It's been great. Thank you, everybody, for putting up with me and stuff, too. And Mr. Nisley, I found out through this process that he does not have a heart. Don't let him kid you. I'm teasing. So I can't thank you enough for everybody. But there will be more thanks as we move forward. So. Thank you, and with that, Madam Chair, turn it over to you.
Okay, so we are going to have House File 1437 as amended, laid over, and and then so we'll see you all Tuesday morning at 10:15. And no. Tuesday? Oh, excuse me. Oh, wait, I'll get the notes. Excuse me, 4:30 on Tuesday. Or at the call of the chair. So stay tuned. And if you would be so kind, unless you really want to take home weekend reading, you could leave this in your packet. We'll be talking about this again on Tuesday. So you could, if you want to leave that in your packet, that would be great. And with that, have a great weekend, and I believe we are adjourned.